Today's program has been brought to you by GreatBrewers.com, a social media marketing platform dedicated to promoting the world's great brewers and the beers they create. For more information, visit GreatBrewers.com. You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org, a nonprofit, member-supported radio station. We're millions strong, with folks tuning in from over 200 countries. We are education. We are entertainment. We are the future of food. May is our membership drive. Become a member and support us while receiving e-newsletters, advanced invites, special discounts, and a membership card. We need your support. Visit our website and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for believing in us and enjoy the show.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43 and the Good Beer Seal, joined tonight by my wingman, Ed Baristecki, also a Good Beer Seal bar owner from Mug's Ale House. How are you?
Good evening, Jimmy.
You know what today is? It's May 14th, 2013.
Is it?
And you've been doing the show for over 3 years now. And how many times have you been on the show, Ed? Like five? Ten?
Probably five.
Yeah, and you're one of my favorite guests, man.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, so
I appreciate that.
We're gonna give a shout out,
especially when I get a call at 12 o'clock.
Yeah, we needed a wingman today. But I give a shout out to our sponsor, GreatBrewers.com. Check them out. You can learn all about beer and take the Great Brewers 100 tests, which I think I'm going to make my whole staff do at Jimmy's Number 43. We've got some special guests today. We're kind of moving up the Hudson Valley. There's so many great new breweries in New York State at our recent New York City Brewers Choice. Over 20 of the 25 breweries were from New York State. Things have changed a lot in the last few years. We got Peekskill is really one of the top breweries in New York State. They're up in the Hudson Valley. And we have the guys from Newburgh today. We got Chris and Paul. Chris Basso is the brewer, and Paul Halico is the president. And a special guest, Kevin Gary from the fancy restaurant group that he won't even
Epic
name
Management
to us.
Company.
And what are the restaurants you guys have, Kevin?
We have four restaurants. We have Lartuzzi, Delanima, Anfora, and La Picho, three of which are in the West Village and one in the East Village. La Picho is our newest place.
So you guys come off as like a consulting company, but you really have like four of my favorite restaurants. And I was going to yell at you, but now I'm like, I'm going to have to ask you about
three Italian joints and a wine bar.
You have to applaud him for that. Come on.
No, it's pretty cool. But there's a good story here tonight. So Chris and Kevin, you guys met years ago. Tell us how you guys met. You guys were in a homebrewing class.
We actually met a long time ago. We were just saying before the show, Chris, it was like 2005?
I think it was around 2005, yeah. My first week or two at Brooklyn Brewery. Garrett Oliver, world-renowned brewer, and my brand-new boss decided we're going to do a homebrew class at Gramercy Tavern. And I, being new to brewing, he knew I had all homebrew stuff at home, because I hadn't put it away yet, since that happens after you've been a professional brewer for a while. You never touch this stuff again. But
well, I think Garrett was a little bit nervous, because we were basically just trying to do like a class for the staff. I was a manager at Gramercy Tavern. I put together the beer list, and we were just trying to do a little beer education, and we thought it would be cool to do like a homebrew thing, like a 5-gallon batch in the back of the kitchen. And I don't think Garrett had done a homebrew in so long that I think he needed Chris, because he was more used to doing homebrew.
Exactly. So he was like, yeah, Chris, write a recipe, because I don't know your system and the size and everything. I was like, you sure about this? You know, 2 weeks in. But
and you went to culinary school, right?
Yes, I did go to culinary school. So just going to Gramercy Tavern was big excitement at that time. I was like, wow, this is going to be great. We're going to be doing all this stuff all the time. Not as many field trips going forward there, but it was a fun thing. We went, we did the homebrew, we, you know, got to meet all the staff.
What did you guys brew? I think there was a barley wine.
Yeah,
right?
We did a barley wine, absolutely. I think Garrett wanted something that would age for a while.
We were just saying before the show that it was like, you know, an all-day process, and it was one of the cooler training things for our staff at that restaurant, because I don't work there anymore, but we sold a lot of beer, and it's known as a kind of a beer a restaurant with a great beer list, and it was really eye-opening for the staff. But the cool part was they came in and got to see the magic of the brewing process, and Garrett was kind enough to ship the beer back to the brewery. We bottled it in Little Pony bottles. I think we got about maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 cases.
Great idea.
And I actually think there's still a lot of my friends still work there. We were saying we have to go in for dinner maybe and see if there's any left now, you know, 8 years later, and it was a barley.
Good.
It's probably still kicking. So.
Yeah, that might be a really nice barley wine
cool.
at this point.
So you got
hopefully they won't charge us for it.
So, wait, so Chris, you got some chops then. So you're a home brewer, and you went from home brewing to working at Brooklyn Brewery.
Yeah, pretty much.
How long did you work there?
I was at Brooklyn Brewery almost 7 years, I guess, until I left to start Newburgh, basically.
So what are things that, as a starting person working in a brewery, what are some of the jobs that you had to do to learn your craft?
Oh, I mean, I worked, I started part-time at Brooklyn, and I was hauling bags of malt around, doing all the milling, mashing out, so digging out all the spent grain from the louder tun, doing all the kegging, you know, really just the brute strength stuff. Years later, I found out I only got the job because I looked like I could lift more than the other guy. They interviewed two people, and I guess I... So that day changed my life only because I looked stronger than someone else.
So it's because
you got a full
illusion.
Head of hair there. That's why.
So there's an illusion about brewing. It's not all romance and glamour. It's a lot of just heavy lifting and cleaning and stuff.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a lot of hard work, a lot of repetition of that sort of monotonous hard work. I mean, you got to, you know, it's. I love every moment of it. You know, having a great product at the end that you see other people enjoying and you can enjoy yourself is the really the what draws people to it, and the creativity of, you know, new beers and things like that. But, you know, yeah, the day-to-day stuff is, it's a lot of physical, you know, demanding kind of hard work.
So what's it like when you get back the kegs that are coming back from bars and distributors? Like, what do you have to do? Is there a machine to clean them? Do you have to hose them out?
Yeah, I mean, you hose down the outside. Just to, the things you see on kegs coming back is just, you know, you know, seafood and broken glass, and, you know, some of these bars, you guys know.
Oh, you got,
you know,
my keg back?
They keep them all kinds of places, yeah. So they have all sorts of, you know, stuff on them, and then so you hose them off, and then there's a cleaning machine that you know, they're all different a little bit. Some are really automated. Some are one we have right now. We're just starting out. It's affordable. It's very manual. So you got to pay a lot of attention to it. But, you know, cycle chemicals through it to clean, rinse, and then, you know, pressurize with CO2, and it'll be ready to fill with fresh beer.
I actually have a question for you, because I'm curious how you guys ended up with Phoenix, where you know, for me, I've been doing this, well, selling craft beer for over 20 years, and Phoenix really has been, I don't want to criticize them, but it's like they've been, like, behind everything for a while. But you guys... And for me, it was impressive that they got you, because they needed a little bit of oomph.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's a big part of it. They really kind of courted us heavily, and they see where the industry's going. They know they have to get into that.
Well, I think they've seen it for a long time already, which is incredible to me. That, but, you know, as a local New York, because a lot of New York breweries end up in Manhattan. I mean, they're pretty much, Manhattan is the New York State, you know, distributor. And in my eyes, but Phoenix has been like a sleeping dog, and they've really just been sitting there, and to just pick you guys, I was impressed with it. I really was, because I think that it was good for you and it was good for them.
You know, I think that probably everybody's starting to figure out that there's, you know, craft beer is business, but let's just move a little bit on from that. So you guys, I want to get the story of these guys. Come on.
We can talk about that later.
I mean,
yeah,
for like 5 years, you guys were trying to open a brewery.
Talk about Phoenix. Get the Phoenix people.
So for 5 years, you tried to open a brewery. And tell us this stuff, because this is a good story. Everybody wants to know about opening breweries. You worked in Brooklyn Brewery. You cleaned kegs and lifted malt bags.
Used to drink at Mugs.
Yeah. And then, so how did you figure out that you're going to open a place in Newburgh, and how did that all come together?
Well, me and Paul both grew up in the Hudson Valley, up in near Newburgh, about 15 minutes away in Washingtonville, small little town. So yeah, once I got into better beer, I kind of always wanted to go back home. I think maybe from the day I started, I always, you know, I think a lot of people, they want their own thing, you know. I loved working at Brooklyn. I loved everything about it. The people, Garrett was great. Everyone, you know, I learned so much. I didn't leave because I didn't love it. It's just, you know, the next step is really being in charge fully, especially of the creative process of the beers. You know, I was making, basically making Garrett's beers, and I was proud of them, and I loved being a part of it. And we had input here and there, but at the end of the day, it was, you know, his beer. And so I think just that want to have my own beer and be the final say on the creative side was really the real driving, you know, force behind it.
And Chris, you're also here with Paul, the president of Newburgh. Paul, tell us a little bit how you got involved with Chris and why you opened a brewery.
Sure. I mean, if you want to hear about brewing chops, I'm a CPA, and I left J.P. Morgan, so pretty serious. Trained under brewmaster Jamie.
It's a good
Jamie.
Combination.
That's right. Trained under brewmaster Jamie Dimon at J.P. Morgan. But Chris and I have actually been best friends since we were 12. We went to middle school, high school, college together, actually. He followed me to college. That's a true story. And I started my career actually working with startup companies in a totally different world in technology and biotech. But I loved the startup environment. I loved the energy, the passion, the enthusiasm of the secretary to the CEO, because everyone knew when they came to work every day, every second of their day counted towards the success of that company. And I always knew that's what I wanted to do eventually. I had no idea it was going to be a brewery, but when Chris was in the throes of doing all the feasibility studies and writing the business plan, and we had dinner just one random night, all of a sudden he said, I'm looking for somebody to, you know, do this with me, and I think your skill set could help complement mine. Are you interested? And showed me the business plan. That weekend we went up and checked out the building, and the next day I was like, yeah, I'm in.
What year was this? Just
2008.
3 years ago?
So 2008, you guys are 3 years old.
Yeah,
no,
I guess
no,
the
not 5 years
no,
old.
I mean, we just had our 1 year anniversary of having beer.
Okay.
I guess I feel like the real birth of the company was when we bought our building, and that was January of 2011.
Yep.
Okay.
We didn't start construction until October 2011 after we got all financing in place, mm-hmm. and we were brewing by March of 2012. Beer got released in April 2012.
Wow. Yep. You know, there's a new book out. I'm just starting to figure out really how breweries got started in the era of American craft beer. It's called Audacity of Hops. I think it's coming. It just came out. It was launched at Brooklyn Brewery. It's Tom Acetelli, and I was reading it the other day. And these early pioneers of craft beer, they were literally like getting a space and making their own equipment by hand. And I feel like it's come beyond that, but still, it's kind of the same thing, right? You guys have to start at the ground up, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think the days of cobbling together old dairy equipment are over to some extent, unless you're talking like a nano brewery. But we have a 20-barrel system, so that, you know, our equipment's new and all that. But definitely the, you know, hands-on, day-to-day, everything is, you know, just like any small business. You have to be there constantly. It's 24 hours a day. You don't get to, you know, take time off, really. There's always something to do. Something we did, I mean, we built our tables for our tap room ourselves. We do a lot of things that maybe your normal big company, you know, owners and things don't necessarily do.
And I think that's a great point, though, because I think from the outside looking in, when you're looking on the beer industry and even maybe specifically our brewery, a consumer goes into Mug's Ale House or they go into Jimmy's 43 and they go, oh my gosh, Newberg's on tap in this place. They must be some huge, massive company. And at the end of the day, we're just three guys busting our butts 7 days a week, just like any small startup business. It just so happens that we make beer and get into some awesome places down in the five boroughs. But
yeah, so I think beer as an industry is just very visible.
Yeah.
And so you get a lot of attention. So I think it makes people, oh, you know, you just have to open and you're
I think it's the opposite. I think it actually
success.
Is two or three guys. Because we're friends with, like, Barry, it was one guy, then two guys, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you guys are insiders, I think.
Yeah, I think that if it was more than three guys, I wouldn't even want to buy your beer.
Yeah.
And these days, I don't even know how to approach it. I'm telling you, I'm totally confused because you've got the nanos, you've got guys like this, and then you've got the big guys coming knocking on your door. So who do you give?
I'm like, if I can
like
meet the guys
care,
making the beer, I'm
like
more,
these
likely,
guys,
more likely to buy the beer than if they're just selling beer. But hold on a second. We're going to take a short break because we've got a big show ahead of us. We'll be back in a few minutes here on Beer Sessions Radio.
This one's called Quittin' Time by Pamela Royal on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
So, you like good beer. Whether you're a craft beer pro or just had your first sip of an IPA, GreatBrewers.com is your number one beer resource on the internet. GreatBrewers.com bridges the gap between the world's great brewers and the consumers who enjoy their products. With so much information and misinformation out there, GreatBrewers.com focuses on education and leaves no stone unturned. Take the Great Beer Test on their website and browse through an extensive product catalog. Download their mobile Beer Cloud app, which includes a GPS beer finder, a beer sommelier, and descriptions for over 5,000 different brews. What are you waiting for? Back up that passion for craft beer with some solid information and education.
Visit greatbrewers.com today.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We've got a great lineup here. We got Ed from Mugs Ale House. We got Paul and Chris from Newberg Brewing, and Kevin Gary. What do you Irish guys do that to me? It's like Gary Kevin or Kevin Gary.
My father wanted my middle name to be Edward, so my initials would be Keg. That's a true story.
From the all these crazy restaurants like Artusi and what are the other ones?
Artusi, Delanima, Anfora, and La Picho.
All right. So, Chris Russo, tell us the first beer we had from Newberg because it was really good.
The first beer we went through was our cream ale. So, I think we're being from upstate New York, Hudson Valley. Everyone grows up knowing cream ale, you know, Jenny Cream, things
Jenny
like that.
Cream.
It's a real sort of Northeast thing. So, I always wanted to make my kind of version of a cream ale. So, a real easy drinking beer. Instead of rice and corn to lighten it up, we use flaked oats, flaked barley, some wheat. And little hot bitterness.
I have to say, I'm not
nice
a cream ale fan, but that's probably one of
it's
the most
good
cream ales
I've
ever had. So.
Yeah, just easy drinking beer.
Our other friends up at Crossroads in Athens, they also make a cream ale too.
Yes, Hutch makes a really nice cream ale. Yeah,
yep. And then this next beer was like coffee and sour.
This is
crazy nose to it.
Wait, what color is this beer? This is crazy.
I can't tell.
It's like light amber.
Light amber.
Yeah.
I think it darkens in the morning.
It's a little sour. It's like coffee ground.
This is great.
And sour ale, right?
Yeah, it's we call it cafe sour. Coffee acquired from Ethiopia is the cafe part. Basically, I wanted to make an coffee beer. I love Ethiopian coffee. So I partnered with Plowshares Coffee in Rockland County, just south of us, and got some really great Yirgacheffe coffee. But I wanted to make a beer that wasn't a stout, a porter. You know, those are the normal sort of things you think of when you think coffee beer. I wanted to make a lighter beer. So then with the Ethiopian thing, I went further into that, and I used a staple Ethiopian grain called teff, which they use in their flatbreads called injera. And those are actually done with a sourdough. So that's where then I was like, oh, maybe I could do a sour mash with this this grain that they normally make a sourdough with. So that's what I did. I got this teff, whole grain teff, about 500 pounds in the batch. So it's 30-40% of the grain. Did a sour mash. So, it soured for a couple days in the mash tun. Then did the rest of the brew in the kettle. I added gesso leaf, which is a bittering herb from Ethiopia that they use instead of hops. And then
so you got a theme,
brewed the beer.
A theme with this beer.
Yeah, a little bit of an Ethiopian-inspired beer. And then once the base beer was done, cold-brewed Ethiopian coffee, the Yirgacheffe coffee from Plowshares, got blended in right before filtration.
So I could drink this beer before 12 noon.
How much can
I
just drinking my coffee.
My breakfast.
Never had anything like that before. It's amazing.
Thank you.
This is incredible.
Let's raise our glass to you, Chris. You're really doing a nice job.
Thank you.
I didn't even know that you went back to working with Garrett Oliver in Brooklyn, and I'm really impressed. A couple of times I got your beers at Jimmy's number 43. I really liked it. So,
thank you.
I want to take a step back. We were talking before about, you're picking up these old kegs and there's stuff on them. It's funny because a lot of restaurants really aren't set up for draft beer. And one place I worked will not be named, the first restaurant I worked in New York, the keg room was the walk-in. So there were some kegs in there. Mm-hmm. There was shrimp. There was lettuce. It was all piled on top. And in the back of my mind, I was never going to have a draft beer place. And luckily, the place I found had been built by this crazy guy that built Burp Castle, and it was like there's a whole room with winches and kegs alone.
Showing your age, Jimmy.
My age, but I want to ask Kevin because Kevin's working places like Gramercy Tavern and Lartuzzi. So, what are the keg systems set up like in just like restaurants?
It really depends. I mean, it all depends on if you're building a restaurant from scratch, if you're buying an existing restaurant, because when you're starting a new restaurant, the budget is the budget, and the quality of the ovens and the stoves are generally more important because those are your, and how big of a wine cellar you have, because that's, in our restaurants at least, we sell, a lot of good wine. It's, as much as I'm a beer guy, it's nice to sell $300 Barolo as well. So, each of our restaurants is a little bit different. I usually assert my authority as much as I can to kind of champion beer, although technology is helping. One of our restaurants that we took over that was a restaurant previously, where we have the beer, it's always kind of generally the last thing, is a converted freezer. So I was lucky enough to find a guy that was able to install a piece of equipment called a heat exchange that kind of renders the temperature of the box a little bit irrelevant because, you know, especially with craft beer, a couple degrees high and low, you're just pouring foam. And that's just, you know, as a mm-hmm. as a business guy, and Jimmy, you can attest to this, every time I go to a bar and you see a bartender pull a pint of foam and then dump it, it's $8 down the drain. And that's not good for anybody, right?
Sometimes it's not the beer system, though.
True. It's a combination of a lot of factors, and it's educating your staff and your bartenders and your managers about making sure that if you see that, address it and fix it so that you can get good beer. We've had kegs show up that
foam up no matter what we tried.
Yes,
and that happens.
Do you ever see on the street where the guys are delivering beer and they literally like pull the keg off the truck and it drops 10 feet?
I've seen them roll. Down Bedford Avenue.
I hope that's not my keg.
That's because at Jimmy's number 43, we have a red carpet for the keg delivery.
There you go.
But for you, Ed, okay. So maybe not the restaurants that we know actually put like shrimp and lettuce on top of their kegs in that room. But what about Mug's Ale House? You have a dedicated keg cooler?
I've got two.
Two?
Yeah, well, we do. We've got 32 draft lines. So I started, when I originally started in 92, we had 8. And we escalated to 16 and kept going in increments. And then we felt 32 is the final number. And now, you know, back then it was great. At one point, I think we had the most draft lines in New York, and now it's the novelty's worn off. So,
do you put anything else in that keg in that room besides kegs, or no?
No. See, I do put kegs because I'm a hoarder when it comes to beer, and especially these days where there's so much competition, you have to try to pick and choose and grab beers when they're available.
Yeah.
I'll stick a couple in the meat cooler, but they're never in the vegetable cooler.
Yeah. I mean, it's every time I go to a bar and, you know, you go to bars that have crazy draft lines and I'm just like, can I go in the basement? Like, I'm fascinated by how, because you're right, like sometimes stuff's available and you want to get it because you want to put it on tap, and where do you put it? You know, in New York City, that's a dilemma that you have to address.
It becomes tough.
When you do the Split Thy Skull Festival and you're stockpiling certain kegs, I mean, do you have to put those in?
I'm not the most organized, but I find spots for everything. And like I said, the ones that are in the meat cooler are pretty much for Split Thy Skull or for the Belgium and the Brooklyn Festival that we do, and we store those there. Lately, my wife has made me clean up the basement and, you know, be nice, so I don't have a huge backlog.
You're talking about your house or your bar?
Both.
Well, cheers to Ed from Mug's Ale House, one of the pioneers in craft beer in New York.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. All right, and Kevin Gary's here. Gary Kevin.
From either one's like fine. That.
And Chris and Paul. So go back to Newburgh. We're up in the Hudson Valley. So as far up as Athens, you got Hutch at Crossroads.
Yep, we got Crossroads.
And the Peekskill.
Peekskill, Keegan Ales, Captain Lawrence, Defiant. Rushing Duck is a newer one in Chester. They opened a little after us. Sloop is a Nano Brewery in Poughkeepsie. Those are all the guys we know real well. And then there's
so the Hudson Valley, it's a nice community. Because this summer we're actually doing some festivals up there. There's a gentleman, Roger Myers, from Clearwater, the board of Clearwater, and Offshoot of the Clearwater Fest. We're doing some festivals. June 30th will be in Yonkers. July 20th will be in Kingston. And August is supposed to be Newburgh, but it's either Newburgh or Beacon. So they haven't really got that far.
Okay.
But if we're up there, we're going to work with you guys. But, you know, there's a lot going on up there. So tell us some of the things... Kevin, you said you knew some restaurants in Hudson Valley that you could recommend.
Yeah, a couple of my good buddies open up a restaurant called Restaurant North in Armonk, and they've been open, don't quote me on this, but I think about 2 or 3 years, and they're just loving everything about the local thing in the Hudson Valley. From they're truly doing farm to table. Literally, the farmer pulls up to their back door and unloads the truck, and they're partnering with as many local brewers as they can. And we say in New York City that we're everybody wants to be farm to table, right? Not just with the food, but with the the wineries and the breweries, and it's the right thing to do, and I think we all really want to. But you really can do it in the Hudson Valley because that's where the food's grown. That's where, and there's some great breweries. It's so nice to see that Chris and others are doing. I love Captain Lawrence as well. Great things up in the Hudson Valley because it's great to talk about it, but it's really nice to actually do it.
Yeah, I mean, just for us in general at Newburgh, we have a taproom kitchen, and we do exactly that. Farmer delivers directly to us every week. I get half a pig in every week. We make sausage. We make bacon pork rinds. We do our own charcuterie stuff. You know, we do everything from scratch and as local as possible. I think it'd be just disingenuous to spout, you know, drink local, drink local, drink local, and have a Cisco truck pulling up to the brewery. I don't think that's the right way to go about it. So, yeah, farm to table is really important to us, and I think our food is pretty damn good, actually.
Well, you went to culinary school, right?
Yeah, you know, so it's nice to have that outlet again. I kind of had to get out of it for a while to work at Brooklyn. We obviously had a great food focus there in Brooklyn with Garrett and all, and so we did a lot of great food stuff, but having the kitchen has really been a lot of fun. And so
do you have any time to actually cook, or are you just brewing?
If the guys need a vacation or something, I work the line. you know, it goes back to that, you know, new business.
I thought you only had three guys.
You're still young.
Yeah,
you're
well, we get part-time people for the taproom kitchen. We have Friday, Saturday, Sunday we're open, so.
Well, we're going to come up. I'm actually going to Newburgh tomorrow, which is so crazy.
Oh, really?
This Hudson Rising thing. There's a meeting at something, and I'm going to be in Newburgh tomorrow. Isn't that crazy?
There you go.
I know. Come visit us.
Is this coincidence or what?
Yeah.
Come on. So, Kevin, let's go back to you. Kevin, you're a restaurant guy long term. Tell us how you got started and where you're from.
I'm from Albany, so I'm from upstate. So I have it's in my interest to make sure that the Hudson Valley in upstate New York does well. My entire family is. Still in upstate New York, and you know, my uncle owns three restaurants, two in Albany, one in Lake Placid. Grabbed me when I was 14 years old and said I needed a dishwasher, and I was happy to do it. Probably the best job I ever had. And
dishwashing is an awesome job.
Dishwashing
that was my first job too at 14.
Dishwashing and bar backing. If I could support my family doing those, I would do it the rest of my life.
Cheers to that. Well, he just—it's like offensive linemen in football, and absolutely. You know, bar backs and dishwashing.
I'm short, so I'm going to say fullback.
The people that make everything run that are underappreciated and behind the scenes.
I can't.
Yeah.
And you don't have to talk to anybody.
Yeah, I can't open up the restaurants every day if the dishwasher doesn't show up.
No,
It's and I, you know, all my life worked. Cooked at my uncle's restaurants upstate, you know, went to college in Boston at BC and, you know, waited tables for beer money and just have always tried to get away from the industry a little bit. You know, I have a degree in marketing and figured my mom wants me to wear a suit at some point and was always trying to get away from it. And then it kept sucking me back in. When I moved to New York, I couldn't pay my rent 1 month because I spent all my money drinking beer. And landed at Gramercy Tavern, and it turned into a career for me. Realized that you have to do what you enjoy in life and hopefully what you're good at, and it was the place that solidified for me that the restaurant and hospitality industry can be a career and is a legitimate career, and I just fell in love with it and I've had a blast ever since, and it's what I'm doing. And that's it's great. I've been lucky enough to meet some great people and just, yeah, and
many
drink
of
beer.
Us have had that epiphany moment when we realized that it wasn't just, you know, for not too long ago, restaurants were kind of like considered not a career. And it's great to hear you say that. But so one thing you did, you were at Gramercy Tavern, and you put together one of the first vintage beer lists in the city.
Yeah. At one point, the general manager and managing partner there, a gentleman by the name of Kevin Mahan, who's been my mentor and just a fantastic guy. You should have him on the podcast, actually. He's a big, big beer guy. You know, he kind of challenged me one time with let's do something different. You know, the ethos of Gramercy was always let's do whatever we're doing really well and let's be the pioneers on the next thing. And he had a couple of vintage beers kind of kicking around the cellar, and we cracked them one day and they're really good. And I was like, this is kind of interesting, aging beer. You know, something that you know you usually hear born on date.
I'm a big vintage guy, so
yeah.
You don't have to, you know, profess it to me.
Yeah, and I'll tell you this: we're gonna first between you, Ed, and also our buddy Sam Barbier at Waterfront Ale House. You guys have been in business a long time. You have some great vintage cellar selections. But first, let's take a short break. Again, we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio.
You're listening to Favorite Flower by Pamela Royal on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
Like what you hear so far? Support the network and become a member. Membership helps us bring you the best food radio in the world and gives you access to thousands of dollars in discounts at the sustainably minded businesses that support us. To become a member, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org today.
Thank you. Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, Roberta's in Brooklyn. We love it out here. It's more than pizza. We're going to chow after this. Ed, what are we going to eat tonight? We're going to have like a Moe's Fun Farm pork collar and a few other things. Some ramps.
I'm going to eat anything.
People, you know, this is
actually,
one of my favorite restaurants. You know that? And I think that's the only reason I do the show. Is I get to come out here and hang out with you guys afterwards. Chris and Paul and Kevin and Ed.
It's a great restaurant.
We're
going to
sit down and have a really great dinner and finish drinking our beers. So, Chris, what was the next beer you just poured? Because we have like four more beers to drink.
Yeah.
Which we'll keep drinking.
I just poured you our Newberg Brown Ale. So this is another one of our year-rounds. And it's more of a southern-style English brown ale. I think I like a lot of English style beers. Maybe that comes from Brooklyn. I think Brooklyn has influenced me in that way. But nice and dark, rich, a lot of sort of toffee, toasted grain, without being that roasted, you know, quality you get in a stout. I think it's towing the line there. But nice and drinkable, 4.2%. We do a lot of sessionable beers at in Newberg. And so the cream ale was 4.2, the brown ale is 4.2. We do a lot of things that are 4 and even less. And so it's important to me. It's just beer I like to drink. I like, you know, flavor. And so there's no reason a 4% beer can't be full flavored. And I think the brown ale is a really great example of that. So
take care of us old guys.
What do you think? What do you think of it, Ed? What does it remind you
of? I really like this. We just had this up at Mugs. And, you know, it in the environment now, we have to, like, rotate beers, which I used to hate doing when I may even go back to doing what I used to do, where I didn't really rotate as much because there's so many.
Well, you've got a very close. You've got, like, half your lines are, like, always changing. The other half, you always have, like, Anchor Liberty for, like, 20 years.
We've had Liberty, yeah. We're probably one of the oldest Anchor Liberty accounts steady. I don't think we've taken it off from day one. And, like, Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, too, that just come to mind. That, of course, then the Brooklyn beers. But all of them have been with us
for
20 years.
You have to read Tom Acetelli's Audacity of Hops book.
No.
Talks about how they came up with Cascade Hops and Anchor Liberty was the first beer to do it. But, Chris, so when you were at Brooklyn, tell us a couple of the favorite beers that you worked on. Because I love Brooklyn beer.
Oh, the favorite beers over the years. Just the brown ale made me think about the Dark Matter, which was the Brooklyn brown ale aged in bourbon barrels. That was a really great beer. And that was the original version of it. People really in the know around here, there was an original version that was given out as gifts, basically. We just made, I think we had one or two barrels left over from the original bottling of Black Ops. And we put brown. We looked around the brewery and said, what else do we have? We're not going to leave these barrels empty. So we had brown ale in the tank, and we threw that in, and that was the original Dark Matter. We later did it as a Brewmaster Reserve, and it was a little bit stronger and a slightly different recipe. But the original one was one of my favorites. But the Brewmaster Reserve version was also nice. Honestly, the local series is really great. Doing all that bottle conditioning stuff was really cool. That's part of why I got my full-time job, too, so I love those beers. We were so busy that they needed me full-time.
You were making those at the original Brooklyn Brewery in Williamsburg before they expanded.
Absolutely, yeah. All the local, anything actually, bottle condition is still coming out of Brooklyn. None of that's done anywhere else. Sriracha Ace, great beer when we did that, still around. Yeah. Now it's a, you know, and it's a year-round, and there's a reason for it. It was, you know, just a beer everyone loved. And we actually did an unfiltered Helles one time.
Really?
One of the few lagers we ever did.
That
over
beer was
the.
Awesome. I remember that beer.
Yep.
What was it called?
Few lagers we ever did. It was called Keller Helles, Newberg or Brooklyn Keller Helles, and it was just a Keller beer lager, unfiltered, and it was just so fresh and good, and I think it really made me respect, you know, lagers a bit more, and it was one of my favorites.
And Ed, you just did, Brooklyn just made a special beer for your anniversary, right?
Yeah, I've been trying to convince them to give me a second batch.
What was the name of the beer?
It's called Blood Brothers. It was a red IPA that we came up with. I talked to Garrett and Rob, the gentleman that primarily was brewing it. I guess it would have been you a couple of years ago.
This was last year.
Yeah, this was, well, October. It came out in October, but it was a great beer. It came out exactly what I wanted it to be, and we had everybody was coming in to drink it. I mean, we didn't think we were going to go through it as quickly.
No, that was great. And let's talk about the vintage beer. So Kevin and Gary, he did a vintage beer list at Gramercy Tavern. But you at Mug's Ale House and also Sam Barbieri at Waterfront Ale House, you guys just have like storerooms of vintage beers. So what do you have in your cellar that we should try that Kevin and I should go drink later?
I don't even know what I have in my cellar. I have to go down there. I think Bill Coleman would probably know more. I mean, we did a I've been doing this since 92. And as professionally since 92. Before that, I was doing it just as a beer lover.
That's when you played in the polka band.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Polka band. Played at Stouts Brewing Stouts Brewing Company. We played their Oktoberfest years prior. So anyway, that'll be another show. But with Billy and Warren, my two favorite beer geeks out there, we had a Casey Stengel and Jim Anderson from Philadelphia. We had a Casey Stengel beer tasting. And talk about vintage. We had a Bass King's Ale that was 100 years old, and it was waxed and corked, and I actually blessed myself before I went to drink it. But I figured it was waxed, and it had the cork in it, and everything's going to be fine. It was, and that was the oldest beer, and the youngest beer, I think, was the first Thomas Hardy's, which was 67
or something, right?
67, 8,
when
maybe.
When did you have this tasting, Ed, and where?
We had it at Mug's years ago. I mean, when Jim was around. Jim is in running the Anderson out in Scotland now. But it was Billy and Warren. They just came to me with this idea. It was actually, I think at the time, I don't think there was a beer periodical out there, or maybe Ale Street was, but I think Wine Spectator did a article. I think Billy Loeb or Will Loeb he wrote a whole article on it, and it was impressive. I mean, it was just crazy. I sat there and just looked at it like,
you're going deep. So Kevin,
you want to talk about vintage? That's vintage.
I want names and I want vintages. So Kevin, tell us a couple of your favorite vintage beers you had from your list at Gramercy.
Well, when we were first putting the list together at Gramercy, I didn't really know where to start. So we had a good relationship with Garrett, and he was really my wingman in terms of getting me beer, because, you know, I was, even though I worked at, you know, Gramercy Tavern's a nice restaurant, who am I? So he was able to really, he was excited by it. So, you know, he was my broker. He called up brewer friends and said, what do you got? You know, Gramercy wants to do this list. And even from Garrett's, I think, at the brewery, he sold me a case of 92 Thomas Hardy's for like $100, you know, and that was I was like, yes, I'll
well,
please.
Back then they were distributing it, I think, right?
But they didn't have the back vintage stuff, so I think they had more like current release stuff.
Okay.
Like,
I remember, you know, the vintage list period. That was well after the distribution, because I was there, and they sold the distribution before I even started.
Right.
So
yeah, so I mean, but we're talking about 92 to 90.
Yeah, and stuff.
Oh yeah, there was all kinds of goodies hiding out in the warehouse.
Yeah,
sure. Sure.
Yeah,
sure.
I mean, B United was the one that had a lot of stuff that was, you know, it wasn't selling. People weren't, you know, back 8-10 years ago, people weren't really eager for old beer, and at that time, it was easy to get the stuff because it just wasn't
Sammy
a market
Klaus,
for it.
Sammy
so,
Klaus
was so, yeah, tell us a couple other vintage beers that you've had over the years that you really like.
Well,
in
the beginning, what we used to do is we had, you know, the standards. I call them standards. Sammy Klaus, Sierra Nevada, Bigfoot. When Brooklyn Monster came out, we started vintaging that. Thomas Hardy's, of course, Gales, Prize Old Ale, the Harvest Ales, a lot of the English style.
Aventinus is great with a couple of
Aventinus,
years of age.
Yep. They even, I think, absolutely. I think at one year they did their own vintaging of it, yep, or whatever it was. And so there are a lot out there. And then, like you said, people started
catching on a little bit, and the brewers started.
The brewers started vintage them
because it was more for the brewers to drink. It wasn't commercially viable for a while, so they all had stuff, but you had to kind of have the connection and be like, "What do you got? I want to list it."
Well, what'd you say? Born on date before? Like, what's
yeah,
that?
Exactly. We had another one. We had that was great. We had Dogfish Head Worldwide Stout 2000, right, which was I want to say it was like in the 20% ABV, and we had this one dude that used to play power forward for the Nets. He was like 6'9". And he came in and drank the whole case in like 3 weeks.
Wow.
And it was unbelievable. He walked out sober.
My first exposure to WWS was, I think,
you know,
somebody came in.
Sorry. Kevin, if you work out, you can drink more. That's the truth. So
I'm trying to work out.
So wait, that's okay. I'm overwhelmed now. Wait, there's so many names. But you mentioned a few. The George Gale.
George Gales Prize. I love Gales.
You know, Sierra Nevada. So there's a starting point for people where if you're looking at vintage beers, there's definitely some that have a track record because that's kind of important.
Yeah.
Because we got a lot of beers. Like one time, the Brooklyn and Schneider collaboration, the Schneider Hopfenweiss.
Yep.
That the importer United happened to have a backlog of kegs from the year before, and it was a mistake that they still had them, but it actually had softened beautifully. And comparing that to the new vintage, I actually preferred that after it sat for a year. So I do think a lot of beers I get, sometimes I'll get in particular like holiday ales, which are usually stronger beers. I will hold them, and you see that there's a tradition now of people doing Christmas in July, but sometimes I'll hold a beer until the next November.
What's the oldest beer in your cellar?
Now they're all gone, but when I opened Jimmy's number 43, the original owner who had founded Burp Castle went nuts, and he had Old Crustacean barley wines and the last vintage of Sammy Klaus. And I think when we opened, we actually had in 2005 a vintage list of over 10 beers, and we didn't know what we were doing, but they moved really fast.
Well, it's interesting because old doesn't mean better. It was because like wine, it's a direct correlation to that. The older it gets, the more it evolves and theoretically better, but beer, it kind of goes through like up and downs. Like there can be like black periods where it's like it's not drinking, and then it comes back a little bit. It's really weird.
Yeah, I mean, and then storage issues and things like that, and bottling issues too, and
it's
a lot
it's
of
like
things.
Wine too. You go to certain wine stores, an unnamed wine store that used to be over a Subway, and their cellar was basically right above the Subway heat. You were told to never buy anything that
and
wasn't
the vibration, good. Right?
Yeah, but Chris, last thing, Chris Russo, you're a brewer. You're doing a great job up in Newburgh. Would you ever make a vintage beer? And what type of beer would that be?
I don't know that you go out making a vintage beer, but I think you make a beer that can be aged. And we're actually just started a barrel program. And back to the Gales a little bit, I was saying how much I love it. I'm trying to actually do more of a sort of British stock ale type barrel aging things. So still with Britannomyces and some bugs, but more in the British tradition. So I have a vatted porter type thing in the barrels already. I'm going to be doing a big barley wine. Things like that. I think everyone's doing the Belgian stuff. But I think
it's incredible how Brett has actually come into the forefront. Like in the last year or two, it's like everybody's doing Brett now. I mean, locally, Kelso did a Brett IPA that I fell in love with, and we're pouring it presently also. But it's like it's incredible how that actually is current, and it took a while, but it's there. And because you mentioned it, sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Brett can be a beautiful primary fermentation as well. Then I'm sure that's what Kelso did with that beer. And we're our Berliner, I call it a Berliner Weiss sort of thing, but it's probably going to have a large amount of rye in it instead of wheat. But that's going to be primary fermented with Britannomyces. I think that's going to be a real nice beer. And yeah, the Brett in the barrels is sort of. There was always bread in barrels, when they were aging their beers for any length of time before sanitation was what it was. And so, I think I'm going to make those beers purposefully, but then I think our Imperial Stout will age nicely. We've done a strong Belgian beer. We've done some other strong things, even though we love session beers in Newburgh. I would never pigeonhole myself and say we're just a session beer brewery. Right. There's so many great styles, and I want to brew them all.
Chris,
so.
get us one more beer before we close out, okay? So I'm going to announce some of the events coming up. First of all, it's American Craft Beer Week. A lot of people are talking about it, but we'll join in too. It's May 13th and 19th. Find out how and where to celebrate at craftbeer.com. But the real thing that's coming to New York is Savor, our friends from the Brewers Association. They're moving Savor to New York this year, so... come check it out and go to goodbrasil.com to find out more. We're actually bringing Long Island breweries to New York that week. We've got the opening of the Michael Jackson movie, Beer Hunter, the movie. We're hosting the premiere on June 11th at Anthology Film Archives in New York. You can go to goodbrasil to learn more about that. Steve Hindy from Brooklyn Brewery is going to be there. Tom Acatelli from the author of Audacity of Hops and All About Beer with John Hall. So it's going to be a very cool week in New York. I know Stag's Head's doing a really awesome kickoff. There'll be a lot of our buddy Sam Merritt from Cicerone is going to be doing a Cicerone beer tasting on June 13th. A lot of things are going on, and you're just going to hear more about it soon. For Savor, coming to New York on June 14th and 15th. All right, what's the last beer that we have here? From Chris Russo.
Basso, but that's okay.
Jimmy. Oh, man.
Jimmy.
Who's Chris Russo?
It's the Mad Dog.
Wait, oh, that's the guy from sports on TV.
Yeah, I hope
you should have corrected
me. I hope I don't sound
guzzle
like him.
Guzzle it, Jim. Jim, guzzle it right now.
I don't know, Michael.
No.
What is it? See, I can say crazy things, but you're supposed to correct me.
Yeah, guzzle it. Jimmy,
it's
guzzle
my
it.
Show.
It's Kevin, Gary,
place,
Gary,
you know?
Kevin, and Ed from Muggs.
I'm a huge Mad Dog and Francesa fan from back in the day, so I'm cool.
Yeah, exactly. I grew up with that stuff. So this is a chili lime stout. It's got a little kick to it. Mm. It's actually the small beer from our Imperial Stout as well. So it's only about 4%, our Imperial Stout being 11%. Took the second runnings, made this beer, infused it with Mexican chilies. Like five different chilies, dried black limes from they're a Middle Eastern thing. They brine and dry
is that
in the sun.
Where you get the
whole
hair
limes.
From is the Middle Eastern thing.
Yeah.
No. But this is really great. It shows us how you can add flavor to session
again,
beers.
Full flavored 4%.
Chris, you did great. I was teasing you about Chris Russo, but that's why when I talked to Garrett Oliver, I said, "Didn't you work with Chris Russo?" And he said, "Who?" Chris Bass. You guys, so Paul, everyone, we're going to go around and everyone just say hello. Ed, thanks
hello.
So much. Paul?
Yeah, thank you. And really quick, if we could just throw in, we're going to be at Beercraft on Thursday night. We're doing a 15-line tap takeover. So we'll be there starting at 6 o'clock. And you mentioned Savor. We'll be participating in Savor, too. We'll be pouring our Honey Weizen and Brown.
Congratulations, because there's not too many New York breweries at Savor. I know Blue Point from Long Island and Brooklyn Brewery probably, and you guys, right?
And Captain
couple others?
Yeah, only a couple. So it's nice to be a part of it. There's only, 60, 70 breweries.
That's great.
But thanks for having us. Yeah. We really had fun.
Thanks, Chris and Kevin.
Welcome to New York.
Thanks so much. Come have a beer at Lartuzzi, La Piccio, Gelanima, or Anfora.
All four. So where are you? Are you at all four restaurants?
I split. I'm pulled in a lot of directions. Split between the office and all the restaurants.
He's probably not married.
No, I am.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She works in the restaurant business, too. She gets it.
All right.
Okay.
So, hey, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrews.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal. You can learn more about us on Facebook and Twitter. Twitter is @beer_sessions. If you like this podcast, give us a good review on iTunes, too. Thanks to Chris, Paul. Charlie's not here. There's Kevin and there's Ed. Thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor, and our engineer, Joe Galarraga. Hello to our new interns, Justin and Maggie. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.